This is How I Built My Audience with Blake Immel.
Hello, I'm Blake, and today on the show, we'll be getting free consulting from Arvid Kahl.
Arvid is the writer of Zero to Sold. He also runs the Bootstrap Founder website and blog. He's very active on Twitter. You can find him at Arvid Kahl, A-R-V-I-D-K-A-H-L. Arvid has over 13,000 followers on Twitter, and it's all been built on a foundation of kindness and being helpful to others. Here are three things that you're going to learn in this one. First, how generosity can be an ultimate social strategy. Second, what building in public really means. And third, the three pillars of social media growth. Enough recap, let's roll the interview. This man is one of the most generous people on Twitter. So let's just start right there. First and foremost, how has generosity been a strategy for you on Twitter?
Ah, that's a very good question. I don't know if it's a strategy or just my default. I think it's more that than anything else, but I think it's just super enjoyable to be nice to people. I don't know if there's anybody who wouldn't say that, but I feel like saying this explicitly and acting on it seems to be something newish, or at least something surprising in this kind of cutthroat competitive entrepreneurial space. What I see is that there's so many more communities right now that are like large support groups. And I think Twitter, the indie hacker, indie founder bootstrapping Twitter is one of these. Mm-hmm. People just really understand that if you like raise all the boats at once with the tide, you have so much more impact than if you just like cherry pick who you want to help. So being generous and being helpful is a default state that seems to really resonate with people. It's not surprising, right? If you have a choice between the person that is selfish and the person that is helpful and supportive, you gravitate towards the person that is helpful, unless, of course, you're in an industry where selfishness is a virtue and weakness, or like there's a weakness in being nice and helpful. I don't really have an example for this because most industries celebrate the people that are nice and helpful in the end, but I feel it's just a nice thing to do. And honestly, I have a lot of time. I sold the business that I worked on like 24/7 for 2 years now, a year and a half ago. And ever since then, I had a lot of time to write. I had a lot of time to be on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And if you have a lot of time, you can help a lot of people. So that has worked out pretty well for me.
What a way to start here. And I do want to establish basically for the audience what the goal of this episode is. So my goal here with you right now is to pick your brain and find out how to bootstrap an audience from zero to gold. You see what I did there? Mm-hmm. Zero to gold. Okay.
I love it.
So people that don't know, Zero to Sold is Arvid's latest book, but he's got an upcoming one. We'll touch on all that. But let's go into this a little bit, the build in public movement. You're a big believer in it, but can you please enlighten us on how building in public doesn't just mean tweeting about your project? What more is there to it? Because it seems like people think that it's all about just tweeting, here's my revenue and here's what we did.
There's generally a misconception in when you look at the term audience and audience building. At least that's what I feel. For many people, an audience is just really the people standing in front of a stage, and then there's a musician and he's like yelling at them and they cheer, and that's the audience, right? They're consumers. They're purely passive. They're not engaging in the process. They're just really there to consume. And while this is true for the classical definition of audience, which comes from the Latin word for hearing, for listening, I think an audience in this kind of more digital interactive world is much more than this. It's essentially anybody who should be paying attention to you. It's like the best and still not perfect description that I have found. But anybody at any time in the past, in the future, right now, people who should be resonating with you. That's what I feel an audience is. And when you look at building an audience, it's not really just getting followers on Twitter. That's also too short-sighted, because what is that more than a number, right? You can have 100,000 followers and only 20 of them are actually active people. The rest are bots. It's really that the number doesn't mean anything. You want an engaged group of people that is really engaging with you at all times. The misconception here is on many levels. It's what an audience is, what audience building is, and essentially also what building in public is, because building in public is not just really tweeting about, oh, today I did this. Building in public is essentially two things. It's building a brand for yourself as a founder and a brand for the thing that you're building at the same time. So you have this personal brand and you have this professional brand, right? The product brand, whatever kind of SaaS or info product you're working on, which is the thing that you describe, right? Where you say, okay, today I got my first customer and I built this feature or I wrote this chapter. That's great. But the, I feel more important part is elevating yourself into this position of being an entrepreneur that is actually going through the motions and doing this in public and showing people, okay, I struggle with this and I had some success with that. Don't really understand why. I'm still going to try, right? This kind of personal thing where you share your journey that is not just the highlights, but everything, right? It's the dim corners. It's the pits you fall into and everything in between that makes this a genuine story. And that's what I feel building the public is because, and that's, I think, the whole point of this, the brand for the product, that's a great thing to have, right? Getting customers and making money, that's nice. But we are in this place in this world where not every startup is successful. Like many of them, they just don't work. And then you're left with essentially a startup that doesn't work. You're not just building that brand. You're building your personal brand because that transcends your efforts at building products, right? While you built in public, whatever happens to your startup, your thing is something that nobody can take away from you. The people you meet, the founders you interact with, the learnings that you have, and the learnings that you then share and teach to others, that stuff stays with you no matter if your startup succeeds or fails. And that's where building in public really shines because you essentially, no matter what happens to your business, you're going up. You're just leveling up constantly by just exposing the world to you and, I guess, you to the world.
For sure. And when you were starting out there, it sparked a thought in me that I've thought before. You mentioned how audience is misconstrued. It's often misunderstood. One thing that I've always thought about how audience is misunderstood is that if you're a community leader or an audience builder, that you're at the very top of the hierarchy and then everybody else is your follower. Yeah. Like Twitter defaults to saying followers is the way to describe your friends on Twitter. I've never really thought of it, I guess, that way personally, because when you're building an audience, there are multiple leaders in there and there are people that will hype you up. There are people that will do certain things for you, permissionless work that will bear the burden of a lot of things that will engage. So there are a lot of different leaders in an audience. So even if you're the one building it, you're not the only one leading that audience. Do you agree with that?
Yes. And that's why we need to step away from this person on stage, audience in the pit kind of image that we have of an audience, right? Because the person on stage is essentially talking at people by definition, right? He's talking down to people, literally talking down to people. But if you look at the audience on Twitter, and I think the Twitter is a perfect example, you're talking to people. That's a whole different thing because you are essentially on the same level. Even though I may have more experience building a business, I'm still talking to people who have way more experience in building a business. And at the same time, I'm talking to people who are just starting out. It's a hierarchy, but it still is a hierarchy, kind of, but it's by far not as much as we have this image of this audience. And I feel in this whole talk, Twitter, that as an example, a tweet is a tweet. Like even if you reply to a tweet, it's still a tweet. Right? That itself is a sign of equality in terms of communication. Mm-hmm. If you look at other social media platforms like Instagram, you have this big thing, the picture and the message, and then little comments on the side. And that already is a hierarchy built into the system. I feel on Twitter, it's not as strong a hierarchy because a tweet is a reply to another tweet and they all interact. Even a thread is a tweet. It's like we all have the same building blocks and that's what we use to communicate. And that makes it more of egalitarian, equal kind of society that happens on Twitter, which makes this a nice little support group because people just help each other because they're all essentially on the same level, just with different personal experiences.
I've never thought of it that way before, but that's really interesting. And hopefully the people listening in do use it as a support system. There certainly are many factions within Twitter that do not break down those building blocks, but we won't really dive into that too much. I think marketing Twitter and creator Twitter is very supportive overall. Yes. And that's a great place to be. Shifting a little bit into actual tactics. We've talked about the what of audience building a tiny bit, but let's get into the how, the why. How have you used the term bootstrap for a business? Many people use this, but that's the foundation of Zero to Sold. It's how to build a bootstrapped business. Now you're working on Audience First is your next book. How have you managed to bootstrap an audience from zero?
Okay, so I feel there's three pillars to growth for an audience. And these are engagement, like actually engaging with people, empowerment, which is like helping people succeed, and providing valuable content. I think content is the normal thing we think of first when we think about social media and marketing, right? Oh, we have a blog post and we link to it and people are super excited for no reason and then they love it. Right? That's the kind of approach that content has. But I feel content is like almost the least important out of all of these, because if you have nobody who's following you, nobody will look at your content. And if you're, right, sure. If there's nobody there, like you can write articles and nobody sees them. That's great. Like
I've done that very much where it's just gone into the void.
Yeah. Yelling at the void. Again, this is talking at people, and talking at people without an audience. Like imagine a band on stage and nobody's listening. Like why would they even perform? And it's the same thing for you on Twitter. Like why would you put stuff out there? Even Think Boy stuff, like super interesting quotes. And I have done this before as well. And I still do from time to time, but I feel this is so much less interesting than actually engaging. And that's the thing that you can do from day one. You don't have an audience, you're on Twitter, you just created your account yesterday, or it's like from 2009, but you never used it, like in my case. What you do to get an audience for yourself is really just borrowing somebody else's audience. I just yesterday or 2 days ago, I came up with the terms audience audition, which is you go to somebody else's audience and you audition to be somebody that they should follow. Which is really easily done. You just essentially follow these big accounts, the interesting accounts that have an audience already, and you turn on notifications, you figure out when they tweet. And then once they tweet, you have something meaningful and helpful and supportive to say, you put it there and you put yourself in front of this other audience. And the people that like you, that think you are a person like the big account that you follow, that they should be following in the future because you have insightful stuff, then they will follow you. It's like you borrow from this bigger account, but you're not really borrowing anything, because Twitter is not a zero-sum game. Twitter is an abundance project, right? The more relationships between people, the better. Like if you have, I don't know, 10 followers and I get also those 10 followers following me, you still have your 10 followers. There's nothing stealing really in this case. And I think this engagement process is finding another audience, auditioning for it, being cool, being nice, being helpful, and then having these people trickle over. That's just what you could do from day one. And I've been doing this, I'm still doing this every single day. I'm putting myself out there, engaging with other people that may have hundreds of thousands of followers, or people who have hundreds of followers or tens of followers. I don't care. I want to be there for the other people that they follow or are followed by, to see if they're maybe interested in what I have to say. Right? Numbers are not that important, particularly not when they're super engaging Twitter accounts out there who have only, I don't know, 120 followers, and they deserve a couple thousand, but they're just not there yet. They're still super interesting to interact with. And that's how you build this network. This is how you build this graph of interconnected people and Twitter accounts that then will shovel over new accounts and new followers, because you're just interesting. If you're interesting, people will be interested in you. So be interesting in front of them. That's really all you can do. And that maybe quickly about empowerment, because that's the thing that is mostly the gratitude and just really being nice part. Help other people, like help them be seen. They have a question, you don't know the answer, retweet it. Maybe somebody in your following will have the answer. Or give them your opinion on something that they asked their opinion on. It's not going to hurt you to say something nice to somebody, but it certainly might make their day. And if you have a larger following, which I have at this point, just really retweeting somebody's question or success, tiny little success, can open up a whole lot of opportunities for them. And that is also how I get followers. The days where I don't tweet and just empower are the days where I get the most followers, because people really like people who are nice to them.
Man, that's a complex formula, huh? Be nice and good stuff happens to you.
Right? Yeah.
Man, I wish it was replicable in any way.
It's surprising how people don't understand that this is like innately the thing they should be doing on a social media platform. But hey, if we can help them figure this out, all the better.
Yeah. I've been saying lately, I've really been hammering home, what does it cost you to spend 2 seconds to hit a heart on a screen on Twitter? Yeah. Like literally nothing.
Even a retweet is 2 clicks. I don't know. But yeah, honestly, like 2 clicks, maybe even with a nice message in between.
Sure.
So Okay, you can help them and support them and be nice to them at the same time and right. show everybody else that you're nice. Like, how is this not something that everybody does all the time? But apparently, we are still being, like, I wouldn't say raised, but conditioned by the industries we work in that we should keep stuff to ourselves. There's competition out there. They're going to steal our ideas, going to steal our advantages that we have, which is why the built in public movement is still struggling, because a lot of people are saying, oh, if I build in public, then everybody's going to know my secrets. They still haven't understood that if you look at it from an abundance mindset, there is no stealing. There is only inspiration, and it will come back to you. There's just this trust in the graph, in the community, in the cloud, in the group, whatever it is that you have to develop. And then you will see, oh yeah, this is obviously the path that will make everybody's life better.
And there are seriously no secrets either. That's the thing. Yeah. That nobody else, nobody wants to talk about it. Like, everybody wants the secret. Here's the secret. There's no such thing as the secret to growth. Yeah. You put in hard work. You be an interesting, kind person. You put others before yourself and you wait some time. If you do that stuff, it happens, and there's no secret. And the same thing with a business. There's no secret to a business, really. If you boil it down to it, do you have an audience for the problem? Do you have a clear problem defined? Do you have something that can solve the problem? Do you have a way that you can communicate it? Like, it's really not a secret. And so people scared about, oh, my idea is going to get stolen if I build in public. Like, who cares? Because then somebody's just validating that your idea is cool.
Yeah.
So go build it better. That should just be motivation, if anything.
Yeah, it's a restrictive mindset to believe that people might do you harm in this expansive economy. People have had that happen to them. They figured out something, they had a cool idea, and then somebody else did it and they didn't get to do it. If you look at it from, okay, by somebody else doing this, I don't or couldn't or shouldn't do this. If you look at it from that perspective, well, obviously it feels like you've been like, somebody stole something from you. But the fact that they just decided that somebody stole something from them, they might not be aware of that. That's a choice. There's a choice in how you look at these things. Yeah. And I consider to be an optimist the right choice to look at these kind of things and to see that even though, look, maybe we have an idea and we really would like to build it, and then we communicate the idea and somebody else who also had that idea is now super enthused and he builds the thing. Isn't that good? Isn't that what we wanted in the first place? The thing to exist?
Yeah.
Right? Isn't there enough in the world where we could now put our attention to and look at this community, figure out their critical problems, and then solve them for them? Isn't that also fine? Like, why is there any kind of, how would you say, the scarcity there? I don't think there is. There's enough for us to go around for all of us to build something meaningful.
It's like wanting to find the cure to a disease, but only wanting it if you're the one that can find it. But
yeah, it's very selfish in a way.
Yeah, right. And going back to this idea of engaging, people like Gary Vee and others have been really influential in bringing people into the ecosystem of creating content. But the engagement part, and Gary is actually super good at engaging with people for how big his account is. The thing that he really hammers home is, hey, you've got to create content. It's going to be huge for your career, huge for your brand. And he's totally correct about it. But when people hear that, they think, oh, I've got to create original content all the time. That doesn't mean curating. That doesn't mean engaging or commenting. But I think shifting the mindset to, you mentioned the building blocks on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Everything's kind of, the level is set. Everything is content. The retweet is an endorsement of content, which is content itself. The quote tweet is just added endorsement with, or even like, even not an endorsement in terms of like, you always agree with everything you retweet, but it's an endorsement of sorts. A comment is just extra content in a different format.
That's the thing. A conversation is happening, and that is actually emergence of knowledge. That is like literally new things happen because people start to interact with each other. There's this original content, which is also important, of course, like right, somebody puts a thread with a lot of insights and then people start communicating. The insights are great, but the fact that then there's this whole other generation of knowledge, that is mind-blowing. And that is the content that is why this network exists, why Twitter is so popular and so powerful, is because it allows for this additional content to emerge. And by contributing, by just being there and asking another question that dives into another aspect of a thing that people are already discussing, you are contributing. You're not even creating content by asking a question, but maybe somebody else will pick up on this and then pull in a whole other lot of people and something new comes out of this. So content is not just a blog post or like a quote from like Mahatma Gandhi or something. It doesn't have to be just that. It can be even the tiniest little bit of engagement, or as you said, a retweet, that can explode a conversation meaningfully, right? Doesn't it often also invites the trolls and stuff, but hey, that's just how the world works. Yeah. But that can just bring so many people into this community, this like ad hoc little conversational community, and just provide so many more opinions and perspectives, better for everybody. So yeah, content is a lot more than just text content as we knew it in the past.
Do you think that people should care about their following to follower ratio?
Personally, no, because I have like right now, I think I have 12,000 something followers and I have 7,000 or 8,000 people that I follow. So I don't know what that means in terms of ratio, but probably some people would say this is way off. I could follow 20 people and that would be super elite. Honestly, I don't care for two reasons. First off, vanity. I don't care about vanity stuff. Like any ratio that is like measured then gets optimized and then you turn it into who has the best kind of ratio. Not for me. And second, I really want to know what the people that I follow and that follow me are up to every single day. Like literally what I try to do is help tiny accounts on Twitter get more exposure and their projects to be recognized as something meaningful. Like I need to see those people work and I need to see what they're working on. So by not following them, I would do myself a disservice, because that if that's what I'm about, helping people in a community, then I have to keep my eye on the community. So if the ratio would disallow me from doing that, then I'm getting rid of the ratio, which I'm not even using it. Yeah, I don't believe in this. Not for myself and not for others. I think it's not required.
That's good to hear that, because that's definitely a concern for a lot of people. They look at these accounts like, oh, Naval and Sahil Lavinia, they're not following anybody. It's, yeah, but whatever.
They still do, right? They have lists. That's the thing. Like on Twitter, you can create these lists of accounts and you can follow the list. And then the list will essentially be your Twitter feed. So you can have a list of 20,000 accounts, 20,000 Twitter accounts, which is also, by the way, the only way you can get across the 5,000 follower limit until you yourself have 5,000 followers. It's complicated. But yeah, like you can only follow up to 5,000 people until you have yourself 5,000 or more in followers. But if you have a list and you can put like 20, 30, 40,000 accounts in there, and that's perfectly fine. And I guarantee you, Naval and Peter Levels and all these people who follow zero or one person, they have lists and their feed looks just like yours. It's a cosmetic thing. And it's a ratio that is a vanity ratio both. And I don't know what they're trying to show with this. And I do not want to speculate. Honestly, I don't care. Everybody can do this any way they want to do it. I personally love to see who I'm following and I would love others to see who I'm following so they can then follow them too. And everybody benefits. That's what I like. Because these lists are private, yeah, right? You don't see those lists that these people follow. And
unless you make them public, for sure, yeah. Well, I want to shift to even getting a little more technical here to round things out. Just your tech stack in general, I think it could be super interesting for people to know. Any software or tools that you use, whether it's for growing your audience on Twitter, for writing your book, for promoting books, for anything that you really use on a regular basis, would love your tech stack.
Let's go. Well, I have three monitors in front of me. This one up here is exclusively for TweetDeck. I have TweetDeck running for my Twitter interactions. I still use Twitter, the normal client, but TweetDeck is nice for sourcing interesting things. There's a column for my books, a column for the audience first term, so I can see when people talk about audience first, so I can chime in and see what's happening. Then there's a list of high impact accounts that I follow, like people who have interesting things to say that I follow separately. And then my whole feed is there, my DMs, just really one screen that I have constantly, so I can look at it and see what's happening. So it can be like flexible and engaging. Then when it comes to Twitter, I use scheduling tools. I use Hypefury because I am in Berlin in Germany, but most of my audience is in the United States and in India for some reason. There's a lot of, it's a global audience pretty much. So I need to schedule my tweets at a time when they have most impact. And I do that essentially from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. US time. Pretty much, but still have a couple tweets here and there for my not United States audience so they can engage with me as well. And Hypefury does this. It kind of allows me to schedule certain blocks of time during the day and schedule my retweets, schedule certain tweets that I have. So that's a tool I use. And for writing, I'm a software engineer by trade. So I use Markdown for my writing in very basic writing format. But for the books themselves, I found a tool called Vellum. Vellum is a Mac app that allows me to create like PDFs and EPUBs and all these kind of formats that I just push into the stores, and a print-ready PDF that I can put on Amazon KDP so they can print on demand the books that I have there. Vellum itself is, I think, a $400 or $250 software expense, so it's not the cheapest. It's not free, but it's definitely worth it. That's something cool. And anything else, all the little tools that I need, I built myself, software engineer. So if I need a script to help me with my, I don't know, headline formatting, the title formatting, APA, Chicago style capitalization and stuff, I could just build a script for that. I have a post, I think, on my blog, the Bootstrap Founder, there is a post on how I wrote Zero to Sold, the book, really with all the tools in there, all the strategies that I had in writing this book. I think it's right there. I can provide you with the link as well, but it's on my blog.
That's super helpful. Anything else that you use on a regular basis for your work, for communication, like anything that helps you connect with your audience?
Yeah, it's really just being active on Twitter, having the blog. A blog is important. And I really recycle or reuse, depends on what perspective you take on this, all of my content. Like I have this kind of, I have a newsletter, I have a blog, I have a podcast, and I use Twitter. And all I do, and the books I write, it's all the same stuff. Every week I write something and I use it for the book, and I dictate it into this microphone for the podcast. I use it on the blog, and then I send it out every Friday on my newsletter. I use the same piece of content four times because people have different requirements. Some people can only listen to stuff because that's the only time in the day when they take out their dog for a walk, that when they can actually consume stuff, because everything else is work or kids, home office, corona. It's just the craziness of this world allows for less time to spend on reading for many people. So I reuse all of this. And having multiple outlets for the same content really engages a bigger audience, or a more inclusive audience too. Like I have a lot of people in my audience who are dyslexic, who don't like to read large blobs of text. So having my content in the podcast shape for them is a godsend, because all of a sudden they can now consume what I put out every single week without needing to force themselves to read. So it's also an inclusivity thing. So it helps to have multiple formats for the content that you have. So yeah, blog is important. And then maybe a podcast or an audio version of what you do, that also helps.
I love the simplicity of it, because it's really easy to just have a million different ideas and then try to do them all. And then it just doesn't work. So making it easy for yourself to create the content on a regular basis is ultimately the most important thing, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got a couple more questions here. One I'll ask at the very end because it's just totally unrelated. Sticking on subject for our last related question, I would love, as part of this podcast, if you would just give us a tiny little sneak peek of something that's in your new book coming up.
Actually, I gave you already quite a couple. So this, I'm really working on the practical stuff more in this book. Zero to Sold was about the whole journey and all the things that I learned. But Audience First is really about finding the audience you want to serve, finding the critical problem, and then figuring out how you can solve it with the audience in this back and forth built in public loop process. So maybe really super quick, one of the core problems of all of this, and we talked about it earlier, people misunderstanding what an audience first approach is, that they think, I can build my thing and then I build my audience and then I sell it to them. But figuring out who your audience is maybe the most important part, like before you build it, like figuring out who you want to empower, who you want to serve. It's not easy, but it's a five-step process that I found really helps you, can really help you to figure out who you want to serve. And that is really looking at your day, taking a day or two and writing down all the kinds of groups and communities that you're part of. Like starting your day and looking at what you're doing. You go to your coffee machine, you make a coffee. Okay, I'm apparently somebody who likes coffee in the morning. That's a group, coffee enthusiasts. Then go to do your job. What is your job? You're a software engineer, whatever it is, write that down. But also look around you. Are you a person who is into gaming because you have a gaming computer and you have a work computer? Mm. Write that down. You're a gamer. Or are you into reading? You have lots of books. I'm an avid reader. Or do you have an aquarium? I love fish. I'm a person that really enjoys having like pets that live in water. There's all these groups of people that we are part of in our lives that you could actually build something meaningful to solve their problems. It doesn't have to be just your job. just a software engineer. You don't have to serve software engineers exclusively in your life. You could help so many more people. So make a list of every group you're part of. Make a list of the groups that your partner in life or your family members are part of that you have access to, and then start ranking this. And that's what I'm describing in the book, this guide, this step-by-step guide to find the best audience to actually serve and help for, help their problems, help solving their problems. Is you figure out who you have affinity for, like rank those groups from 1 to 10, how much you like actually helping these people. Then the next step is to find an opportunity. You look into each of these communities and see, do they have interesting, captivating problems that I could solve or I would even want to solve? Rank them 1 to 10. And then you look at, are people welcome? Are entrepreneurs welcome in this community? There are communities out there, founder community, where people love having tools. They love using new SaaS things to solve their problems. But there are communities that don't really the problem solve. They just love the way things are. That's just what it is. So they're welcome for you, and budgets might not exist. So rank them in that regard. Finally, look at the market. Is it big enough to sustain a business, but still small enough not so you're not competing with the giants? And then you have four numbers. You add them up. You rank that list, and you sort it by the biggest to smallest in the sum. And now you have a list of all the groups that you're part of that you could actually solve problems in that you would like and that are big enough for you in a market that welcomes you and has a budget. And that is the first step, like really at the fastest and quickest explanation I could give. And of course, the book goes into much more detail on how to source these particular kinds of information. But if you do this, before you start building your business, you're left with a list of verified audiences with verified problems that you could serve. And then you really just have to dive into it, figure out their most critical problem and start serving them and start building this audience in public, building a following and just communicating with them. So that's, maybe that helps.
You know? No, that definitely helps. And I think we could have just used that one clip as the entire podcast episode because that was super valuable. All right. So I'm gonna kill the mood and just ask you a different question, unrelated. Yeah. And then we'll finish things off. I'll give you a chance to talk about everything you're working on because I know it's a lot.
Cool.
So the final question here is if you could just please tell us something interesting about you that most people might not actually know, totally unrelated to what you actually do.
So every Christmas, I grab my accordion because as a German child, we're all supposed to learn an instrument. So from like age 9 to I think 16, and then you can imagine how awkward that is, I learned how to play the accordion. So every Christmas, there's like a couple days where we just whip out the accordion and I play Christmas music. So I'm an avid accordion player. Maybe that's something. But yeah, it's just something I really enjoy. It's like making music. My girlfriend, Danielle, who I co-founded Feedback Panda, the company we sold for, she's an opera singer. She's a musician. Music is important to me. And the accordion is also important to me. So if you need like North German aquatic music, like the sea shanty equivalent of German music, that's where I am.
Do you have the accordion with you?
Oh, I don't have it right here, but it certainly is in this apartment. So yeah, okay, I could whip it out if I wanted to, but I do not want to.
Dang it. All right. Again, Arvind Kaul, thank you so much for coming on. Would love to give you a platform here to talk about Permanent Link and Audience First and Zero to Sold and your Twitter and wherever people can find you and whatever you want to chat about right now.
Oh, that's really sweet. Well, you mentioned them all. Like Permanent Link is the thing I built for authors like me who are fed up with link rot in their books, right? It's really a platform to help people put links in their books that stand the test of time, even if the original source goes away eventually. So that's a permanent.link. So if you're an author, check it out. And the most important part, honestly, to me is come to my Twitter and check me out. If you like what you saw and or heard here, just come to Twitter at Arvind Kaul, ArvidKahl. And follow me there. You can see the books that I have written. You can see the books that I am writing right there and find all the good stuff. Audience First is the book that I'm currently writing. And it's an audience first approach to building an audience first product for audience first people. So I'm trying to write it with the people I'm writing it for. So if you're interested in audience first, the concept of building audiences, go to audiencefirst.link and you can actually send me a little message there of something you want to see in the book, and I will put it in the book because obviously you're the audience for my book. So you might just tell me what you need to hear and what you want to learn. So that's the approach I'm taking there. So audiencefirst.link and otherwise Twitter. I'm always there. Can always engage me. DMs are open and I talk to everybody. So there you go.
I can testify that this is true. He does respond and he does comment to everybody. So thank you again, Arvid, for coming on. And we'll have to have you on again soon to play the accordion for us.
Oh, God. Maybe. It was an absolute pleasure to be on. So thanks so much. It was a really a joyful conversation. I really had a great time.
All right. We'll see.
Thank you for listening to How I Built My Audience. If you found something noteworthy or interesting in this episode, remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And hey, share it with a friend.